Vance and Republican leaders tomorrow. He's meeting with Marco Rubio. What do you want to see come out of this meeting and what's happening in Doha, the Hamas-Israeli negotiators?
Well, just like under the Biden administration, I'd like the United States to be a country where the law matters. Benjamin Netanyahu is an accused war criminal, so should Donald Trump, so was Joe Biden. But the United States should be a place where we apply our laws to ourselves. That's the whole purpose of the law. It's completely illegal to continue to arm chronic and obstinate human rights abusers like Israel. And we should stop doing that. I don't expect the Trump administration will all of a sudden think that the law matters, given its behavior. The Biden administration also never came to this reasonable conclusion. But the American people don't have to accept that we live in a lawless country where the government can just do whatever it wants. That's not the case. We have the power to act. We have the power to...
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
I'm Don Jacobson, one of the hosts of Moving On, here every Friday right after the noon news. Moving On isn't the only place to hear folk music on KBOO. Every weekday from 5:30 to 7 a.m., a different host brings you a variety of folk music, and bluegrass is on Saturdays from 9 a.m. till noon. This music exists not to make a gazillionaires, but it is music that comes from the heart and the head for the enrichment and entertainment of the listeners. With federal funding for public broadcasting in the crosshairs, please step up and support this vital community institution. Go to kboo.fm/give, text to KBOO 44321, or click on Donate on your mobile app. Your generosity is greatly appreciated.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, the 7th of July. The year is 2025. It is approximately 8:01 a.m. I am Cecil Prescott, and I am sitting in as your host today on More Talk Radio. Our phone numbers for those who would like to call and share your thoughts and opinions are 503-231-8187. Put that down. When you feel the urge to call, give us a call. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And thank you all for tuning in and listening to our radio program. For those who are listening live, I hope you had a good, restful weekend, a lot of activities, holiday weekend activities and picnics and parks and displays of fireworks all over the place. And certainly here in Oregon, there were multitude of festivals culminating in downtown Portland, the Waterfront Blues Festival, which is an annual event here in Portland. So all of you who are in the midst of summer, thank you for taking some time and being a part of this listening radio audience and of this community, because we are living in times which are so very trying, to say the least. And I have a couple of queries I would like to hear your viewpoints on, and those are, what helps get you and your community through these difficult days? What help gets you and your community through these difficult days? And you say, what difficult days? Well, hold on. We'll share a little bit more in a second. And where is your focus of your energy and why? This past week, the Congress passed and the president signed this bill, which will wreak havoc on the lives of millions of people in our society. So what helped you get you through your community through these difficult days? And what is the focus of your energy and why? There is so much, whether it's on immigration, right, or cuts in medical benefits, or trans rights, and we can go down the list. There are so many things that are impacting so many communities, both locally and globally. And people, in many ways, are in a panic, but that's just one example. And just I'd like to share with you this brief article by Jamar Tisby and his reflections on some of the things that has happened in the past week in terms of the passage of this bill in Congress. And Jamar Tisby is a public intellectual. He is a professor, I think in religious studies, but or history. But this is from his Substack article, Trump Personal Army. And in it, he talks about ICE. And here it is. He writes, "I jolted awake at 5 a.m. with a chilling realization. ICE is Trump's personal army, and it just got a $170 billion boost. The big ugly bill apportions more than $170 billion to ICE and border security. This makes ICE more well-funded than any other U.S. law enforcement agency and richer than the entire military budget of all but 15 countries. What will this money buy? Vehicles, drones, weapons, surveillance software, detention facility, tactical gears, more agents, more raids, more power." He continues, "What concerns me most is that ICE is classified as law enforcement, not military. For all its problems, the military has some limits. It needs congressional approval for some actions. Soldiers take an oath. Many of them enlist out of a sense of duty and honor. Not so with ICE. ICE is a paramilitary force with ultimate allegiance to the president, not to the Constitution, not to the people. Its mandate is vague and constantly shifting. It started with immigrants, but it can easily expand to include, quote, rioters, dissenters, disloyal citizens. It operates with almost no public oversight and responds directly to executive authority. For instance, the Posse Comitatus Act largely prevented the president from deploying the U.S. military as a domestic police force, would not apply to ICE. ICE is the president's personal goon squad, a private police force with the power to conduct raids, surveillance, arrests, and disappearances, all without military oversight or congressional restraint. With $170 billion behind it, ICE can now be deployed not just against immigrants, but against anyone who threatens the regime's ideological, economic, or political grip. Anyone can be a target for harassment, imprisonment, or disappearing. ICE is the president's personal army to carry out his authoritarian will. Picture it. Raids on residences in the middle of the night, surveillance that monitors everyone everywhere for breaches of loyalty, guns trained on and discharged towards protesters and resistors of all sorts. Dr. Tisby continues, he writes, with the appropriation of obscene level of funding, the scenario escalates quickly. Step one, ICE conducts another public abduction. Step two, people fed up at the trauma of seeing their neighbors ripped off the streets for no reason get loud and agitated. Step three, an immature, untrained, and trigger-eager ICE agent open fires. Step four, an uprising ensues. Step five, the president imposes martial law. Suddenly, the 2026 midterm election, our so-called plan to rein in this regime, are suspended. For, quote, safety reason, for, quote, national security. That's what $170 billion of your tax dollar allocated to ICE actually buys. Dr. Tisby draws a conclusion with these words. I'm not predicting the future. I'm just reading the historical patterns. When an authoritarian leader gets control of a militarized force that he can deploy with impunity, the situation does not get better. It gets rapidly worse. And he concludes with these words. What can you do? He says, secure a civil rights lawyer, pack a go bag, secure your digital presence, identify your security board. I know this is heavy, but if you're committed to truth, justice, and democracy, you can't afford to be unprepared. Authoritarianism escalates while people are still debating whether it really is happening. We are beyond debate. It's time to act. Pass it on to someone who's standing for justice and make sure they're standing safely. The words of Dr. Jamal Tisby, Trump personal army, a reflection on the $170 billion that was allocated to ICE and what it means for all of us. So what are your thoughts? What keeps you up at night? And what has empowered you and your community to carry on? Give us some, I'm interested in some of your reflections. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Those are our numbers. Maybe you had some reflection on the article by Dr. Tisby I wrote about ICE and its impact on our society. And as we reflect on the bill that was just passed and enacted into law and are just beginning to grapple with, to wrestle with the implication in terms of the protection of communities, the safety of those most vulnerable, the loss of opportunity for health care and education. These are things that continue to impact us. Let us hear your thoughts, and let's go to a first caller, and we'll go to Santiago. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm okay. What are your words to share today?
You know, I think in terms of what we need to do for resistance and how we need to act, you know, I think the first place we need to realize is that, like, you know, and while the words of Jamar Tisby are prescient, obviously, it's important to remember that these things have already happened in communities of color and other marginalized communities, you know, in times leading up to this. And it's things yes. that have been pushed under the radar, because what the administration essentially has done is they've kind of backdoor okayed it by creating the levers that Trump can pull now by manufacturing them in communities where it's obvious nobody cares because it's not happening to them. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Chris Hedges, while I have many disagreements with him, had written previously that, you know, that a no-knock raid in a black neighborhood in Trenton, New Jersey looks no different than a night raid in Fallujah. We have already seen this, and black and brown communities have been talking about this, you know, especially in places where, you know, capital has literally gutted the entire city and then parted it out for capital consumption.
Right. So what can we learn from these communities in terms of their resistance? What are the lessons for today?
Well, what I would say is that we need to start treating, while Republicans are clearly the center of where this is coming from, is recognizing that we also have to hold Democrats accountable as well, and recognize that they are no more our friend than the Republicans are, because the Republicans might be dangling marginalized communities over a fire and threatening to drop us in. Democrats aren't trying to save us from that. They're trying to make it, you know, they're campaigning on it. You know, they're campaigning on, oh, well, if you don't vote for us, they're going to drop you in the fire. But they're not talking about the fact that, like, the fire and the dangling actually exist.
Yes.
So I would say that, you know, with that, you know, we have to start organizing organizing and educating within organizations whose primary role is not focused around electoralism.
Okay.
You know, while electoralism is a tool, we need to have education and wherewithal in the event that electoralism is not going to be the main strategy. And right now, all we've got is people in power right now telling us we need to look to the midterms. We need to look to the midterms.
Sure.
And while that might be helpful,
it's not
going to help us if there's not a movement behind that.
Excellent.
And we're not going to create those movements within the Democratic Party, because, you know, they are fundamentally opposed. I mean, look at the Zoran Mamdani, right? He just won the primary against Andrew Cuomo, and we've seen Democrats who previously called him out correctly as a rapist and a sex pest, and then when push came to shove, between Andrew Cuomo, who has proven himself a failure, and somebody that none of the people want to vote for, and Zora Mamdani, who is a democratic socialist who's speaking to the needs of the people, Democrats in the leadership will rally around Andrew Cuomo, because even if they dislike Andrew Cuomo, he protects private property and the ability for capital to continue to make money. And that's just a microcosm of how we're seeing
excellent
politics will play out.
Excellent, excellent analysis. I appreciate your thoughts and your reflection on power and in terms of the political party and turning our thoughts away from electoralism to community organizing and seeing what we can learn from various communities. Thank you so much, Santiago. We need to go on to our next caller. I appreciate your thoughts and your wisdom. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We began this morning by reflection on where we are as a nation, as a world, and a couple of queries I ask. What are you and your community doing, and where do you find support? Let's go to our next caller who's been waiting. Good morning, Mike. Thank you for your patience.
Cecil, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Cecil, I want to, first of all, identify things properly because you guys keep misdiagnosing what's really happening. First of all, it's globalism versus nationalism. The Republican Party, Trump, are nationalists. That's what America First is all about. And globalists want the whole world to be able to come to America and get and take over what citizens rightfully should have.
Okay,
now, that's
okay.
The difference between...
Okay, I just want you to clarify. I think I understand what you meant by globalist. So define nationalist for me in your understanding. What's the difference?
Okay, a nationalist is basically American first, citizens. If the Republicans want to take care of the citizens first, globalists want to take care of legal aliens. They want the whole world to be able to walk into America and get on social programs.
Okay. Let me just ask you to just help explain a little bit more. So globalists are these people who want, and help me, I'm not trying to disparage you, I'm just asking for clarification. Want people to come to the United States and what, get food stamps?
No, globalists don't believe in borders.
Borders. Okay, and so why are borders important? I think that sounds like that might be an important question. Why do we want borders?
First of all, we live in a capitalistic society, and it functions off supply and demand. When all these people flood into America, there's a demand for housing. So housing goes up. We have a limited housing now. Food goes up. Rent, everything goes up. Crime goes up.
Because there's too many people in the country?
Because it drives up the demand. And so we only have a finite amount of stuff. It's not unlimited. So you can't have all these people coming in here.
Because it sounds as if you're saying it's only a finite number of resources. We can't have zillions of people coming in here. Is that what you're arguing?
That's one of the things I'm arguing.
Okay.
Also, what I'm arguing is that a lot of these people, especially people, let me put it this way. If you go to McDonald's, all you see there is Mexicans. There's no diversity.
So let me ask you. I'll let you finish because it sounds like you started another point. But go ahead. So you go to a restaurant and you see people one nationality and there's no diversity. Okay.
I'm saying when all these people come in, they're bringing in their machinations, they're bringing in their culture.
Machinations? What's that?
Machination is the skill set that they employed in their countries for survival. The skill set that they needed to survive in the countries that they fled. They bring those skill sets here. Most of these people come here are homeless. They don't have jobs. They don't have, you know, they don't have a high degree of education. So when they come here, they get on social programs.
So let me ask you, in terms of American history, in terms of the history of the development of this country, people enter into the country with various skills level at various times. Some people came here by their own initiative. Some people were forced here. But we have to figure out how to make this all work out somehow. I want to give some space to our next caller, so I want you to conclude, Mike, with our final point.
Okay, here's my final point. When people start saying Donald Trump is this, Donald Trump is authoritarianism, Donald Trump won the election by a landslide. So when you talk about
No, I want you to finish your point. You say he won the election by a landslide. What do you mean?
You just seen the election. He won the popular vote. He had a mandate. So when you talk about Donald Trump, you're talking about the American majority of the American people.
Okay,
you're not talking
okay.
about Donald Trump and his organization and his administration. The American people put him there.
Okay, so okay. I'm asking you now since the American people put him there and he has a mandate. So what's the people's response if they disagree with this mandate?
Well, the response is to come up is not to be in the street rioting and tearing up things because, you know, he just passed the Lakin-Riley Act. And what that act does is now illegal aliens that commit certain crimes can now be faster rounded up and deported. So when people go out and riot and create...
Okay, Mike. I appreciate you and I appreciate your thoughts. And I think we've heard your thoughts. And let's hear some other people's responses. So thank you so much for your call and continue to live well. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We began this morning, I began by sharing an article by Dr. Tisby about an implication on the bill that was recently passed and its implication. A couple of callers did share their reflections on where we are. And let's hear from our next caller. Janet has some thoughts. Good morning, Janet. How are you?
Good morning. You know, I'm glad I got a chance to weigh in for a minute.
Okay.
Because it's a tendency to protect ourselves in fear, isolate, and I don't think it's quite the right thing to do.
No.
I got to visit with my great-grandson, his mom, who's in Greece now, and she's black. And she said to me, "You're white, Nana," when she was two. But this dystopian universe, I think about how I'd like to present myself to my family. Not exactly the most pristine conservative matriarch whatsoever, having grown up as a civil rights kid back in the 60s. Now I'm living up in the mountain, and though I recently made some friends with an extraordinary family from Haiti, and the mother has four kids, and then her sister is staying with her, and they can all be working, and then terrified to have to explain to a a 13 and 14 year old and a 20 year old and everybody working so many jobs, what ICE is, and then to say, well, okay, you know, I'm really feeling fabulous to know this family because they have cultural roots and a way to treat each other and a sense of family and not being just a money thing, but to actually recognize how to help and reach out and embrace each other.
Yes.
And that they do that, not just for theirs, not just for other Haitians, but they're actually the mother and the daughter actually working in a memory care place where there's mostly upper middle class white people who are just here, there, or wherever to watch, and thinking in their country these people wouldn't be put in some type of institutional place. They would be taken in by their families. And
yes.
So to have an experience of a family like this coming to me with love and warmth, and then to say, well, come on over, you know, and then to have them up to my place on July 4th, and then the family, and they say, we have a big event here. There's a parade, and there's SDRs now. It's like the corporate takeover of the mountain where you can go for a weekend. You got enough money to spend $1,000 and appreciate the beauty and the river.
But let me,
and then to host this family. That's one of, and to host this family at this big barbecue event, and then have the girl be thinking, I don't know, Mom, I'll be the only black person here. And then to be able to present this as myself, having been there all this time, these are nice people, these are wonderful people, this is what this event is all about, July 4th. Not about just, you know, pretending that nothing is going on, that we don't want to burst our bubble.
Right. Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate your reflection on this interaction. And I'm thinking of a previous caller who, in my opinion, was talking about how different we are from people who are coming in. And your attitude seemed to be different in terms of wanting to know more about the different people, and in terms of learning from one another. How do you respond to people who are saying, we have to be very afraid of these people? They're different from us.
Well, actually, you know, this paranoia and the fear that that we've grown up with, a manufactured opinion and everything, that we're going to get stronger if we respond to hate with fear. I would really be thinking the greatest thing is that the deeper our roots are, that we recognize the important thing is that we're all human beings. And if we don't have a legacy of sharing with our children to appreciate and empathize that the Native American standard is about that the earth doesn't belong to us, that we belong to the earth, then we don't really have anything. This overblown narcissistic greed thing is not really bringing any joy or any love. And you can see the Bezos wedding, and they're not having that much accord with their own families. If I would reflect on how to bring harmony to my family, it's not by foundering, moving on this terrible thing. Oh, be scared, and these are people who are bad, because I see these people from Haiti that they can still thrive and embrace and reflect the things that we're supposed to be caring about in our country after we...
No, thank you.
I don't know. People don't even recognize, they don't understand history and economics. But the point being, my studies in psychology,
yes,
that when Marx was looking finally with the most important thing is how
we
do we have
to,
society where
right.
we have mental health.
Yeah.
He's having not socioeconomic travesty and imperialism.
Hey.
I'm sorry, I'm not feeling too articulate. But
thank you so much. I think we got a very good, healthy sense of what you're coming from, and the need to build community and find our common ground. I appreciate what you're doing and for reminding us of our common humanity. Let's look for our better angels. Thank you so much, Janet, for calling and sharing this morning. I need to move on because we have a caller From across the pond, I understand. So let's move on to Corey, I believe.
Hi, people, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning, good afternoon.
It's 4:30 here. Yeah, good to hear from you. Listening from afar, after the November election, we moved to London.
Yeah, far away as you can, okay.
You were a bit prophetic in that. I'll just briefly say it's good to hear from you. Also, I listened to the caller before the last caller, and they mentioned that how Trump had won by a landslide. Trump won by 1.5 percentage points. He did win the Electoral College by 312 votes, but if that's a landslide, well, then so is Biden, who won by 308 votes. As far as swing states, he only won 230,000 votes between Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So in the historical context, when someone says something such as that, like he won by a landslide, he got a mandate, it's just not true. 1.5 percentage points is not a mandate. And I guess being here in the UK over the past 6 months, we left in January, been here for 6 months as of today, basically, I'm watching what's going on in the States. I feel bad, but I'm also happy that I left, which is a very selfish thing to do. But I've been talking about this for years, and I'm also watching a lot of what's going on here and the reflection here. You know, you have MAGA in the States. Here you still have Brexiteers, and, you know, you got this party, the Reform Party, who are basically copying MAGA. So wherever you go, there's going to be something. But it's still different here. As a black man, I will say this. There is a sort of, as an educated black man, the air of racism. I don't feel it here. I know it exists. I'm not trying to say it doesn't exist, but no place is perfect. I have been watching a lot of what's happening to the Latino population, and I'm also seeing a lot of regret. But I also wonder if it is regret. I was watching a video the other day, and there's a man whose wife was detained, and he said, well, we'll still vote for Donald Trump. And that tells me there's something psychological that's been going on, something psychological going on where, see, so you can take my wife, but you know what? Hey, it's for the greater good. And my final point is this. I think that many people, immigrants who come to America, and they see African Americans. I think to be an American is to sort of hate African Americans, unless there is something passed by the Congress and the Supreme Court. You can't deport us. I self-deported myself, so I think that when I saw, and I did see a lot of, you know, growing up in Houston, you know, and I'll be honest, like even some stuff I saw in Portland, where you had different immigrant groups. You know, it's almost like we have to be and have that proximity to whiteness, and part of that is like the psychological mechanism, well, I got to hate black people too, primarily African Americans. You know, for me to be up here, I have to poop on the people down here. Right. And so I think it's interesting to see, unless there's a mechanism to make us, you know, send us back somewhere, we're not going anywhere. So I hate to see what I'm saying, but I'm also like, well, what did you think was going to happen also? Like, it's like, what did you think was going to happen? He said he was going to do this. And did you think because you're from Cuba, like you won the good ones? And that's what I think I see a lot of. Like, I thought, you know, we were the good ones. We supported him. Yeah, but that's not what he said. He said he was going to send y'all back. And so it is interesting observing from afar. I will stay here. I am staying here, but I still listen to your show. Like, I've been listening. But my first time calling in, I just want to, you know, retort to the person who made the comment about the landslide. It's just that's one thing I don't see here. Of course, nothing is perfect, but people who just make blatant lie statements and just do it. And I think that's a global thing. People just say what they want to say, like that's not true, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, yeah. That's a deeper conversation that I think you touch upon in terms of what is truth and what one can say and get away with. It's something that is dangerous. I appreciate you calling in and for your perspective from Europe, and I hope you check in from time to time and let us know how things are on that side of the pond.
Thanks so much. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers are 503-231-8187. We've had a number of conversations of people this morning talking about their responses to where we are as a nation. We began with an article by Dr. Jamal Tisby, who gave a reflection on the $170 billion that was just given to ICE and the implication on all of us, regardless of where we are. We had some callers reflect. One caller who shared their opinion on nationalism and how it's preferred, and that's how we should live. And everyone who, and I hope I'm accurate and not distorting their perspective, those who are not from this country are dangerous somehow. And we had some callers who shared their perspective of living in multicultural community and the values they gain from that. And last, we had a caller from England who shared his perspective on what it means to be an expatriate 6 months after the election of Donald Trump. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's hear from Tangent right now. Good morning, Tangent. Thank you for calling.
Top of the morning to you, Cecil. You were mentioning a little Britism there. Nationalism, I would describe as to war as hell with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
To hell with everybody else, and I slipped in the war is. Then he mentioned machinations, and I took that apart and came up with, it's mostly like machine nation. They just take out the E, okay?
Okay.
Goodness. Oh, okay. So here's one little thing. I watch, sometimes I skip around and I see like a right-wing kind of news channel or something, but they were reporting about the flooding in Texas, and they interviewed Trump and asked about the FEMA, and he said, no, I don't think they even asked about FEMA. He was just, oh, yeah, some young people sad, and he goes, oh, that's all Biden's doing. So I just want to warn everybody.
Okay.
Everything in the future that's bad, we're going to, that's Biden did it. And remember, it's everything that happens in the future,
it's Biden did it.
Okay, yeah, he created, okay.
And so regardless of they control the presidency, the legislature, and the courts, it's Biden's fault. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And also, I just like mentioned, like, people keep wondering, like, how does this happen? I think it's newspapers. Like, you read about how could the Filipinos elect a dictator's son? And I heard a report on Democracy Now! From a woman over there. I forget the name of her little, you know, Substack thing or whatever. She got media outlet. But she said, well, the newspapers started saying, well, you know, he's a strong leader, and da-da-da-da-da-da, and people just eat the stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
I deliver news. I read them, you know, religiously, I guess I could say. Yeah, more than actually, because I only did church once a week when I did that, but I read them every day, and now I just can't stand to read them because it's so tainted, okay? I can't say they're all lies, but everything is through the perspective of mostly the rich, okay? They have money, these these papers, they're wealthy. We saw, you know,
well, and I think
LA Times and Washington Post.
I think you raise a very good point in terms of how we get our information and your observation. This has always been the case in point, that those who share the news, it's tainted by their interests. And so, as you suggest, news that are dominated by an industry or a political ideology. And that's why at one point, you know, there was, you know, maybe 40 newspapers you read because you get 40 different perspectives. But now that isn't necessarily the case, and the fact that you don't see a variety of viewpoints is dangerous.
But I have to also critique Democracy Now, because sometimes what I hear coming off sounds like it's been coming off the AP wire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Congress is grilling big oil, or you know, they soft pedal questions, or you know, even if they ask something that sounds like a pertinent one, the person will blah 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 for you know 5 minutes, and you'll be so confused. There's no answer there if you really listen carefully.
Well, and I
then
think
they let them go. And
I think you raise a point in terms of how we get information and how we just weave through information is important, and the fact that we aren't teaching critical thinking is reflected in our public policies today, how we discuss things. So, hey, thank you so much for your thoughts. Thank you so much for your thoughts, and appreciate your calling. Thank you so much, Tangent, for calling and sharing. You are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I invite you to give us a call and join in our morning conversation. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we've had a number of phone calls this morning. I'm sharing their perspective. Our last caller, Tangent, I'm sharing some of his thoughts on how we gain information, how we read information, and his observation, their observation, that it is so important to think critically and to look at a variety of sources for information. It is so important, and certainly we can have our favorite stream of information, but even those things must be looked at critically, and we need to look at a variety of sources and ask questions about those. So what are the sources of your information? Where do you have hope, and what is it that allows you to continue to press on when there is so much that grieves us and so much that wear us down? Earlier we had a caller who talked about how the Democrats are fearful of sources, of those who are seeking elections, who are not following the playbook. And the caller was reflecting on the election, New York mayoral election, where New York Democratic Party nominated Zohran Mamdani as their candidate for mayor, and the and how people are losing their marbles for that. I have an article I would ask you to look at by Kasim Rashid, entitled "Why the Powerful Fear Mamdani," and Kasim Rashid writes a lot, and you know, they are a lawyer, and it's important. So I'll share with you a little bit of this piece Mr. Rashid wrote. He says, in a political moment defined by cowardice, compromise, and capitulation, Zohran Kwame Mamdani is doing the unthinkable. He's standing his ground and instead still gaining momentum. And not just against Republicans, but against the billionaires, corporate media giants, and establishment Democrats who continue to sell out the working class to maintain their grip on power. Let's be crystal clear. This is a class war, and Mamdani, a 33-year-old brown Muslim immigrant, is showing us how to win. But will the Democratic Party come to its senses and follow his leads? Let's address this. And then he goes on. He writes, In just the past year, the American elite have thrown hundreds of millions of dollars at Donald Trump in an attempt to avoid his wrath and protect their bottom lines. And Mr. Rashid writes, ABC paid Trump $15 million in a defamation settlement. Paramount cut a $60 million check to Trump for emotional distress. Meta Facebook paid $25 million to Trump after banning him for inciting violence. Corporate law firms coughed up $100 million in fees to stay in his good graces. Columbia University, Target, goes on and on and on. And Mr. Rashid writes, these are the most powerful institutions in the country with every tool imaginable at their disposal, access, capital, legal armies, media clout, and yet they're falling over themselves to appease a twice impeached, 34-time convicted fascist. Instead of wielding their power to uphold justice, they are bankrolling the erosion of democracy. And enter Zohran Mamdani. When the billionaires cozy up to Trump, Zohran Mamdani is telling him, and everyone aligned with him, we will not be intimidated. He isn't just calling out injustice, he refusing to bow to it. And for that, the establishment is panicking. The New York Times told voters not to rank him, then endorse his opponent, who ran a campaign smearing Mamdani with Islamophobic lies. Since Mamdani, when the Times had drawn repeated op-ed articles and hit pieces demonizing and dehumanizing Mamdani. Just this week, the New York Times ran yet another hit piece citing an anonymous, quote, race scientist criticizing Mamdani. The Washington Post editorial board condemned his victory. The Financial Times criticized him for having the audacity to say that billionaires should not exist. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand falsely accused him of promoting, quote, global jihad. Republican officials are already calling for his citizenship to be stripped and for him to be deported. And Democratic leaders like Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries? Nowhere to be found. They refuse to endorse him. You would think that a party with an approval rating gasping for air at 26%, in which nearly 70% want new party leadership, in which you've lost two of the last three presidential elections and currently do not control any branch of the government, would show a bit of humility, especially to a guy who's getting the job done. But you'd be wrong. Establishment Democrats are doubling down in their arrogance and other stupidity, refusing to read the room. And it goes on and on. And so the choice is certainly between us, and as a caller's reminded us, that the corporate Democrats are as responsible as corporate Republicans, and that it's incumbent upon the people to stand up against this authoritarian regime, to not bow down, to not pay billions, and not to bow down before billionaires, that it is important for us to stand with those who are oppressed, to be with those who are hounded, who are harassed. And it is incumbent upon us in this moment to be with those who continue to be oppressed, who human rights are denied, who are being harassed and jailed and hounded. What type of society do we want? We have the society we are. And if that is not the society we want, then there is much that we need to do. We need to stand up. We need to affirm who we are, and we need to identify the type of society we want to build. Those are things that are incumbent upon all of us and things we must call to do. In the coming weeks, we'll hear reflections from people in our community who are doing amazing things and standing up to corporate power and standing up to the regime of fascism. We will hear of people in their community and how they are standing and resisting, whether it is resisting landlords who are doing horrible things to tenants, whether it is resisting politicians and political people and corporations. We will hear the things that people are doing, and hopefully we will be inspired by the work that they are doing. Certainly things are difficult, and it is time for a wake-up call, and we must follow and do that which we are called to do, to choose that which is right. Let's prove them wrong, and let's affirm that we are called to be the people who are called to create a society where all people are welcome and honored and respected. And certainly we have that opportunity here locally. We have, we saw locally how people are standing up, and even within the local government here in Oregon, there are things that people are doing who are resisting. Even when the governor is, you know, resisting a popular call for Head Start for All, and siding with powerful interests, we must continue to say this is something that the people voted for, that the people want, and resist those in power, even if it is the governor of the state. People must continue to resist power and stand up for ordinary folks. This is what we are called to do, and that is what we will continue to do. So this summer, whether it was this 4th of July, I want you, when things are discouraging, that there are things that we can stand for and that we can be in favor for. They may not seem much to celebrate this holiday, but as one writer said, fire up that grill, post copies of the Declarations of Independence and Bill of Rights, read them, and continue to do the hard work. We need to, as one writer say, bring an end to this horror so as soon as possible. And we have the ability to do so. Be encouraged, do not be afraid, for we are called to be honorable and to build a society where all are welcome. You've been listening to More Talk Radio on this year community radio station, KBOO-FM. Stay tuned for more programming and continue to support this resource because we need all of you. Go to your go to our website, click on donate, and become a member of this community. Continue to help us continue to get the word out. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. Stay tuned for more interesting programming here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Thank you.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.